national and international news from an alternative perspective.
Welcome back. Today is Friday, December 9th, and I'm Louis Xu.
And I'm Andrew Seal. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia, to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to the listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It's 5 o'clock and time for a full hour of independent campus, local, and international news.
To start the show, we have News 101 reporter Anya Christina's interview with rapper, DJ, and producer More or Less, whose album came out on November 25th.
Following that, we have News 101 reporter Yushen Tsai's interview with Street Thug Barbers, a group of barbers offering free haircuts to those in need in the downtown east side.
Finally, we have a segment featuring interviews carried out by reporters from CJSW 90.9 FM in Calgary with the protesters at Standing Rock. This is the first segment from their four-part series.
But first, some headlines for today. In campus news, UBC professor Mary Bryson receives violent threats after debate on gender-neutral pronouns. Mary Bryson, a professor with UBC's Faculty of Education, has received considerable online hate mail after a panel debate on academic freedom and the use of gendered pronouns with University of Toronto professor Jordan Peterson. The academic forum was held at U of T and discussed Bill C-16, which adds gender identity and gender expression to the list of prohibited grounds of discrimination in the Canadian Human Rights Act and the gender provisions of the Ontario Human Rights Code. Throughout the panel, Bryson criticized Peterson's claim as damaging and have no scholarly basis. Peterson asserted that there is a natural gender divide in society and that political correctness is damaging. He argues that free speech should include his right to deny using gendered pronouns. In a written statement to the UBC, Bryson said, "The level of post-C-16 debate hate mail and violence threats in my inbox is extraordinary." Bryson also described a large number of aggressive and hateful comments regarding subject matters of violent transphobia, homophobia, and misogyny posted on the live stream of the forum, social media, and an opinion article written by National Post journalist Christy Blatchford. Due to the level of personal and professional attacks that Bryson has been receiving, UBC's Social Justice Institute has posted a petition on its website in support of Bryson. Since the petition's posting on December 1st, 125 people have signed it, including many UBC professors and other notables from the post-secondary academic community. Dr. Angela Radish, the provost of the university, has since released a statement expressing UBC's support for Bryson, given the National Post article and the hate that Bryson has received. Radish said, "The goal of Bill C-16 include to extend protection against hate propaganda to any section of the public that is distinguished by gender identity or expression. This article encourages the reverse." Bryson wrote, "My primary concern about participating in the C-16 debate was that I would be targeted by an extreme level of hate. That concern has become borne out to a degree that I had not anticipated. I have seen no evidence of public violent reprisals against Jordan Peterson. That's interesting in its own right. It's also interesting that the same people who are such ardent supporters of free speech do not support my right to speak freely." Bryson noted that despite the extreme amount of hate, they have also received a large influx of positive messages from supporters, both friends and strangers. All the recommendations submitted by the AMS to the provincial government have been addressed in a consultation report released by the Provincial Standing Committee on Finance. The recommendations made hope to make post-secondary education more affordable for students and addressed operating grants, the UPass program, and student loans. Kathleen Simpson, the AMS VP External, attributes this year's particular success to the AMS coordination with other student associations who are also advocating for more affordable education. Now that the committee has released their recommendations, the Provincial Minister of Finance will review it and consider it when creating next year's provincial budget. One change recommended by the AMS is an increase in operating grants by the same amount annually as the domestic tuition cap. This is because post-secondary funding from the government has decreased by 14% from 1990 to 2009, while the amount funded by students has increased 11%. The committee also responded to the AMS recommendations considering student loans. They recommend that the government establish a needs-based student grant program that addresses students' needs and provides incentives for completion. Finally, the committee's 96th recommendation almost mirrors the AMS statement and suggests that the provincial government committed to long-term funding of the UPass BC program beyond April 2018.
In local news, 45,000 Compass cards were used on Evergreen Line's first 5 days. During its first 5 days of operation, 45,000 Compass cards were used on the new Evergreen SkyTrain extension, according to early data from TransLink. Quote, "We'll be studying it more going forward, but it's off to a pretty good start," unquote, TransLink CEO Kevin Desmond said Thursday after a board of directors meeting, noting the figure is more than the populations of Port Moody, Anmore, and Belcarra combined. Quote, "A lot of people are trying the system out," unquote. The Evergreen Line, an 11-kilometer, 6-station extension to the Millennium Line, opened to the public last Friday. It runs between Burnaby and Coquitlam via Port Moody. Quote, "It was a great opening, and I'm utterly convinced that over time it'll be a big success," unquote, Desmond told the board. It's expected that by 2021, the line will carry 70,000 passengers daily. In terms of overall ridership, Desmond told the board that year-to-date ridership is up 4% and at an all-time high. He said that earlier in the year, indications were that the ridership increase was going to be closer to 2%, but there was a bump in the fall. Quote, "The demand for our service is very strong," Desmond said. "It underlines the importance of our plan going ahead," unquote. The plan to which Desmond was referring is the 10-year vision for Metro Vancouver Transit and Transportation Scheme, the first phase of which was approved by TransLink's Board of Directors and Mayor's Council last month. The total cost of the first phase of the plan is $2 billion, with $370 million coming from the federal government and $246 million coming from the province for capital costs. TransLink is contributing $1.3 billion in capital and operational funding. Regional funding will come from a number of places, including modest fare and property tax increases and a new development cost charge that has to be approved by the province. Desmond said he hopes that by this time next year at the latest, TransLink will be in a position to take action on the second phase of the plan, which includes two new rapid transit lines in Vancouver and Surrey. A $6.5 million plan for a new Robson Street Plaza. The City of Vancouver has released a preliminary conceptual design to permanently transform the 800 block of Robson Street, the road service of Robson Square between Howe and Hornby Streets, into a major pedestrian-only plaza space for the Central Business District. It is anticipated that the project will cost $6.5 million, which primarily consists of removing the two-lane roadway and replacing it with a single level surface of granite and concrete pavers that are consistent with the rest of Robson Square's precinct. The one-block stretch of roadway has been closed since early summer following Vancouver City Council's decision in April to turn the space into a pedestrian-only plaza. Artistic renderings indicate there will be bollards on the street fronting ends of the plaza, with Hornby Street end supplemented by the planting of trees to establish defined block ends. There will also be movable and permanent seating, other street furniture, special lighting, bike parking, and a bike share station, power and water connections so the space can host special events and other programming, and wayfinding signage to promote major attractions. Project proponents with the city have budgeted $3.5 million for the design and the construction of the plaza itself, and another $3 million for changes in the surrounding road network, electrical upgrades, and temporary overhead trolley network by TransLink. Throughout December, the roadway will be the temporary home of Vancouver's official Christmas tree, which was relocated from its previous home at Jack Poole Plaza. Quote, 800 Robson is a special space in the city, reads a Vancouver City staff report that will be submitted to the Vancouver City Council. There is an exceptional opportunity to build on the positive aspects of the plaza in the creation of an integrated and connected space that can continue to serve as the central gathering space at the city's heart, unquote. If the design is approved by the City Council, construction could begin sometime next year.
In national news, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden called on Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to defend international rules of the road in an effort to guide the world through a period of deep uncertainty in global affairs. He delivered this message at an event held in his honor in Ottawa on Thursday night as part of his two-day visit. Biden said, quote, there are periods where the number of genuine leaders on continents are in short supply, and when they're in heavy supply, I have never seen Europe as engaged in as much self-doubt as they are now, unquote. The U.S. Vice President also singled out the issue of climate change as the most consequential issue of our generation. He also went on to say that the world would see significant progress if leaders like Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Angela Merkel stepped up. He said, quote, the progress is going to be made, but it's going to take men like you, Mr. Prime Minister, who understand it has to fit within the context of a liberal economic order, a liberal international order, where there's basic rules of the road, unquote. While there was no mentions of U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, Biden referred to the pervasive uncertainty in Europe and the United States since the Brexit vote and the recent elections in his home country. Today, Biden will attend a welcoming ceremony on Parliament Hill. Later, he will have a private meeting with the Prime Minister before attending a roundtable discussion with Trudeau, the premiers, and Indigenous leaders who will be in Ottawa for a First Minister's meeting. Syrian families hoping to come to Canada might have to wait for several years for their applications to process, as the federal target to resettle refugees in the upcoming year has dropped. Nearly 30,000 more people are in line to come to Canada as refugees. But with reduced numbers for the refugees to be resettled next year, and the large inventory of applications already being processed by Canada's immigration offices, Syrians' family could be waiting for years to come to Canada. Chris Friesen, Director of Settlement Services with the Immigrant Services Society of BC, said, quote, it's something that we need to look at. There is a lot of pent-up interest, unquote. According to the federal government, the 2017 numbers will be lower compared to what is described as the extraordinary target in 2016. In 2016, the target for refugees and protected persons was 55,800. In 2017, that number drops to 40,000. But this number encompasses all refugees from across the world, not just from Syria.
In international news, Germany sees a rise in Russian propaganda and cyber attacks. On Thursday, Germany's domestic intelligence agency reported that there is a striking increase in Russian disinformation campaigns aimed at destabilizing German society. Hans-Georg Maaßen, head of the BfV spy agency, said that they see aggressive and increased cyber spying and cyber operations that could potentially endanger German officials, members of parliament, and employees of democratic parties. According to the agency, these attacks were carried out by government bodies posing as hacktivists. The goal was to spread uncertainty, strengthen extremist groups, and complicate the work of the federal government. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said she could not rule out Russia interfering in Germany's 2017 election through internet attacks. The German intelligence officials have stepped up their warnings in response to the number of attacks. Russian officials have denied all accusations of manipulation and interference intended to weaken the European Union. Those are your campus, local, national, and international headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more contributor segments.
Tired of the gender binary, gender policing, or just want to speak your truth?
Join CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective.
This group of radio makers is all about centering the voices, issues, concerns, and experiences of women-identified, transgender, intersex, two-spirit, genderqueer, gender non-conforming, non-binary, and gender-fluid folks and allies.
Anyone can join, no experience necessary.
Like the Gender Empowerment Collective on Facebook or email volunteer at citr.ca.
Our show, Babe Waves, airs Thursdays from 5 to 6 and features music, interviews, events, news, commentary, basically anything we care to talk about.
So, thank you.
See you then.
Hi everyone, we're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy.
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety, or you can even join our Facebook group.
Welcome back to News 101. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca. Broadcasting live from NCD Mesquite territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us.
Now we have News 101 reporter Anya Christina's interview with rapper, DJ, and producer More or Less, whose album came out on November 25th.
So, I want to ask you about your new album, but just because this is going into the news show, I want to also introduce you to listeners who may not know who you are.
Cool.
So, my first question, if we can just get into it, is when did it all start? Because you do all of it. You're a DJ, producer, and a rapper.
That's true. It all kind of started first with the DJing. So I have an older brother who was DJing, and of course, younger brothers are always following after the older brothers and whatever they're doing. So I started basically DJing, you know, on his gear when he wasn't looking, and then I got into rapping not too long after that, and then production came a little bit of time after that as well.
So you're virtually self-taught?
Especially with the rapping and the production, like, nobody really, you know, put me on anything. I was really just working off the seat of my pants. The equipment that we got, like, my brother DJing is more into house music, so mm-hmm. he was actually more interested in producing that. I have a cousin who was also trying to, you know, make some dance music with us as well, like with the gear. So I didn't even have, like, other people, like, you know, I was working with as a guide for the production. I just basically just jumped in and, you know, figured out ways to do things.
You embody a very socially conscious rap brand. And in Blow the Fuck Up But Stay Humble, there are a lot of themes to unpack because you're fighting gender norms in tracks like Man Up, and then you even go into gun policy in Get Shot. So then what kind of overall impact do you hope to make with your music?
Well, ultimately, I really just hope that people, you know, get a chance to hear it and just get some sort of appreciation for, you know, the music and the styles and what I'm doing, and you know, if anyone gets some information from that and gets some entertainment from it, then all the better. So then really it's like mission accomplished, you know?
Totally.
So as long as people are catching some sort of vibe from what I'm doing, then great. So far, you know, response has been pretty positive for this album. So
yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Thanks.
Totally. It's definitely just tying into that too. Do you think that artists have a responsibility to fans once you have an audience to, I wouldn't say necessarily go as far as being socially conscious all the time. There are different artists with their own styles, but do you still feel like there is a responsibility to at least propagate a particular positive message when you do have a following that you could influence?
I feel like there's, generally speaking, a responsibility for people to just, you know, not be jerks, like, really,
yeah, you know,
just generally speaking, just don't be a jerk, regardless of whether it's, you know, music specifically, or if you, you know, have interest in another kind of art, or if it's just your everyday, like, just, you know, dealing with your neighbor, dealing with your friends, dealing with, you know, strangers down the street, like, just don't be a jerk.
Totally.
Bottom line.
Don't be a jerk. I think that a lot of people could definitely use that as their mantra.
Hopefully. I feel like there aren't enough people thinking about not being jerks, you know, and it just needs to be more of a, more talked about, more of a prevalent concept. It's just, you know, don't be jerky. Like,
and that's where the music comes in, because they're, you're teaching.
I guess somewhat. I mean, I really just more than anything hope that people, you know, sort of catch the vibe and just really, you know, get entertained by what's happening. Because I guess I do sort of follow along the lines of Keras One's edutainment idea, you know, of just like rap has messages. Mm-hmm. And good rap, I feel, has messages. And when, you know, people have done the work necessary, it's that they've got something across. Because even a group like NWA, when they came out, you know, as off-putting for some people and rude mm-hmm. and aggressive as it might have seemed, there were still messages in the music and still them trying to get a point across, you know, as an example. And I just feel like, unfortunately, there aren't enough people, you know, involved in this music thinking about that. Like, they're not really interested in trying to, you know, bring along a point of view as part of the culture. It's just more like, you know, general concepts, like just trying to make money off of it and just trying to sell a brand and that kind of thing, which, you know, I'm not really interested in, obviously. It's just, you know, just more like trying to engage with people, you know? And as long as I've done that, then basically I've done my job.
Totally. Well, in hip hop, started as such a political movement in itself, so it's nice to see that continue in so many ways. The track on your album, Fake Accent, is hilarious. And I was wondering when you were inspired to write it.
It came together from a bunch of different experiences that I've had as an audience, as a member of the audience, as an MC, you know, as someone who also, like, curates shows, myself and Word Burglar and Thomas Quinlan, who runs Han Solo Records, we all came together and formed this show, $5 Rap Show. So we get to, you know, we get to talking to other MCs, not just the ones that perform at the show, but also interested in performing at it. They get in touch with us. I get to witness a lot of the stuff, and part of it too was talking to the sound engineer that I you know was working with on my album, and some other friends of mine in the music, you know, biz, doing their thing, just like anecdotal, you know, information and personal experience. Like, a lot of my stuff comes, I guess, from the combination. So it's just, you know, I just kind of had enough, man. Like, there are just too many people out there just faking the funk.
How does your Canadian identity influence your approach, and how do you try to stay true to it?
Well, I would say I try to really, and I know it's going to sound corny, you know, just as I'm thinking, it's like, really, you're going to say that? It's like, never really forget where you're from. It's just like, you know, I was born and raised in Scarborough, and yeah, in the nice part of Scarborough, and you know, just like gained some, like, entertainment and worldview through mm-hmm. through this music, and then, you know, when you travel, you get some better sense of what other places are like and other people are like in those places, and just kind of get some perspective. And so it's, my interest to try and provide some of my point of view, to provide some perspective.
Out of curiosity then, who are you listening to right now?
Good question. Big ups right now to people who I've never met before that I think their music is dope. Big ups to Czarface, which is 7L and Esoteric, who have been at it for eons, and Inspect the Deck, who is part of that duo became a trio. So yeah, Czarface, they released their third album recently, Fistful Apparel, and it's dope. I mean, my opinion only, I mean, I like the second album the most out of the three that they've released in the last few years, but man, Czarface, killing it, absolutely killing it. And this duo from the UK known as Strange U, absolutely, like, just amazing. Like, the beats are off kilter and slamming, and the lyrics are just smart and funny at times, and dope, and just, like, Strange U from London, UK, absolutely dope. Like, crazy off kilter, boom bap, cosmic madness. Like,
oh, cool.
Just too much. And then, of course, like, the return of Tribe Called Quest,
yeah,
their last album.
Amazing.
Like, man, it's crazy. I was just like, oh my god, they released their album the same month as mine. Like, this is crazy. Like, like, how am I going to compete with that? Like, that's insane.
No, you're just both adding to the conversation.
Which is great. Exactly.
And we need Canadian artists doing the same thing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's exactly how I like to think about it. And big ups to Mocha Only as well, from the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Also makes an appearance on my album.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a fan. Like, I saw him perform once, like, years ago, and it just kind of turned me, you know, like, turned me on to what he was doing. And then I, like, listened to some more. And then I was lucky enough to get him to perform on my album.
Yeah.
And, man, just, like, you know, just bringing it. Just keeps on bringing it. It's dope.
Yeah, no, your passion is emanating through the microphone. It's amazing. I think that, and it shows through in your music as well, not just in this interview. I guess my last question is just, why did you name your album what you named it?
Well, one day I mentioned it on Facebook because someone was complaining about Kanye West again, and I just kind of had this moment like, oh, geez, it's too much. And so I posted that as like sort of a joke, like, my next album will be titled this, like, you just need to chill the fuck out. And and it just, I don't know, it just became more of a thing where I wanted to invest.
Thank you, Anya. Now we have News 101 reporter Yusheng Chai's interview with Street Thug Barbers, a group of barbers offering free haircuts to those in need in the downtown East Side.
First, we're going to take a quick PSA break. Stay tuned for more contributor segments.
The December 2016, January 2017 issue of Discorder magazine is out now.
Now.
We managed to record CITR student executive president Shay McConkie's first glimpse at the new issue.
Whoa!
That's funny.
Open one up yourself to read interviews with Walgreen, poet Adele Barclay, Jakin, Kim Wardle, Dad Thighs, and a guide for playing shows in America, amongst other goodies. Plus, live show reviews of The Body, Hannah Epperson, and album reviews of Monomyth, Daniel Terrence Robertson, and more. Thanks to this issue's advertisers, whom we love dearly, Live Van, Geist, Steam Whistle, The Rickshaw Theater, Timber Concerts, The Rio Theater, Mint Records, Nightwood Editions, Audiopile Records, The Astoria Vinyl Records, The Wise Hall, and Jazz Records. Grab a copy around town or read the issue online at discorder.ca.
Maybe our best issue ever.
Most likely. I would say, like, high chance of best edition ever. Nobody told me did it on my own.
Ba-do-ba-dee-oo-doo-wee, we'll do-wee.
all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people. So check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night right at 9 p.m. after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
Welcome back to News 101. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at CITR.ca, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us. Now we have News 101 reporter Yusheng Cai's interview with Street Thug Barbers, a group of barbers offering free haircuts to those in need in the downtown east side.
What comes to your mind when it comes to hairstyling? A fancy salon with prohibitive numbers on its price list, or a lady with her funky hair dressed and high heel meandering through the most prosperous area of Vancouver? The story that I am telling is about three barbers making people look good and feel good, but it's a story with no relevance to either of the above stereotypes.
Can I get you a glass of water or anything?
Oh, I'd love to.
You have water? Yeah. There you are.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, this morning worked good because it's kind of quiet in the salon today.
Yeah, I know it's around Christmas. You must be very busy.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
Like we were asked to go over to the island to do a homeless haircutting event on the 16th, but it's such a busy week to take off. Yeah, I'll just put this in there.
This friendly man chatting with me is called Cameron Sterling. He's a master in the area of hairstyling. He, along with Josh Malcolm and Ross Wilson, established a special salon in August 2015. They call themselves Street Thug Barbers and have been doing free hairdressing for the downtrodden living in downtown Eastside. Cynthia Scaba from the Future Hair Training once wrote about the Street Thug Barbers, quote, "They know almost everyone in the Oppenheim Park by name. The Oppenheim Park was where the three Street Thug Barbers cut hair for free." Cynthia wrote in her blog, quote, "The three Street Thug Barbers have captured hearts of a community of who some have forgotten or do not even notice. With great respect and curiosity, I talked to the Street Thug Barbers on Thursday morning. I got to the Bamboo Salon in Falls Creek where Cameron works alongside Josh."
This is Josh.
Hi.
This is Yusheng.
Where the fuck
is
Cameron?
Hi, nice to meet you. I'm Yusheng. When I first heard of what you have been doing, I was kind of intrigued by your name, the Street Thug Barbers.
Yeah.
How did you decide to name yours Street Thug Barbers?
I think it was just kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing, half-joking. Myself, I have a history on the streets with drug addiction and all that, so we wanted to kind of just do a funny name, you know, something that people could smile at. And,
yeah. Is it your idea? Or?
No, it was Ross's name.
Okay.
Yeah, Ross came up with the name, so...
Okay, yeah. It's really funny.
And then I was going to give you one of these. We have these shirts that we made up. They're Hug Life.
Oh, that's so nice.
We take Thug Life and we take out the T, right?
Uh-huh.
But you can have that. That's for you.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
And then we put all the, when we sell these, we put all the doors towards just helping on the streets and stuff. So it's neat. Yeah, we started last summer, and it's just snowballed. So now we have people sending us resumes from all over BC wanting to do it in their community, and so it's really neat. And we've gotten to know so many people on the downtown east side, and they feel like family now.
Yeah, I read what the lady from the Future Haircut, Future Hair Cutting mm-hmm. Center.
Yeah.
He wrote about that you guys knew everyone in the Oppenheim Park by name.
Yeah, it's neat.
Yeah, I'm wondering how did you make it?
Just time, and because I think they were the people are most responsive that we have committed to this and stayed with it.
Uh-huh.
So every Sunday they look for us now, and they come out in droves to the park. It's really neat in the summer because we're out in the middle of the park cutting, uh-huh. and people come up and they hang out, and a lot of people now just come to hang out with us, and because we shoot the shit and we.
I know that you've been doing the free hair cutting in the Downtown East Side since August 2015. So what have you been doing since then? The schedule, like...
Oh, every Sunday, since last August 2015, uh-huh. every Sunday from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. On the Downtown East Side, cutting hair, giving free haircuts, conversation, etc.
How those people... get access to you? Did you ever do any like promotion in the?
We started it going down to a place called the Living Room Shelter, and we'd uh-huh. go there. The first week we went there, we told them that we'd come back again the next week, so people would start to remember that this is what we'll be. And so we just kind of established one place that we'd always go, so people can always come back to that spot and find us every week if they're wondering where we're going to be and they don't have access to the internet or our cell phones to get a hold of us. They can always go to the same shelter or ask someone around that shelter and they'll know where we are.
Is that the first time that you did the hair free haircut in the that community?
Yep, it was last August.
Is there any like special memory that you that have helped you to make up your mind to do it again?
You have people stand up and say, like, God bless you and things like that, and just stand up and hug you, and just from the bottom of their heart, they're very sincere and very thankful, and that's the feeling that makes you want to come back and do it again, is that you've given someone else that joy.
We always say to people, like, if you want to know why we do what we do and keep going back, is to just come out once or twice, and you'll feel the energy, you'll feel uh-huh. the love that we have for them and them for us, and just the community. It's great.
Yeah. Is there any like specific person in your mind that have such interaction with you?
There's been so many to count. Every week there's some. There's been people that have cleaned up off drugs throughout months of talking with them and whatnot, and they feel like they have a bit more of a support group. There's people that have gotten jobs after getting a nice haircut, and yeah, it's been neat watching people's families grow. We have one guy who's had two kids in the last 12 year and a half. They had a baby when we met, and they just had the other one 7 weeks ago, so yeah.
Oh, that's
neat.
Great. So I read a report from CDC about you that said the hair cutter has more than one way to help people apart from the hair cutting part. You have also a unique way to access people. So I'm wondering what's that unique way about?
I think it's more about being in somebody's comfort zone, you know? Yeah. We're used to going and being able to pay $50 and get a head massage or a pedicure or something mm-hmm. like that. And when these people don't have those options, they don't have a lot of people in their comfort zone. So when we're cutting and we're touching and talking, it gets rid of their walls around them and it opens up for a more intimate conversation. And I think that's one of the things that really helps.
Is there any, like, difficulty when... dealing with certain people who's really very, introverted, not open to you, to your conversation? Is there any?
Oh, yeah, but, some people, just like our own clients, just want to sit there and uh-huh. Get a haircut, you know? And then other people are dying to open up. They don't even need a haircut. They just want to open up and talk. So you get the two extreme opposites.
Can you give me some examples of those two group of people? People who are very willing to talk to you, and also there's some very introverted people, maybe have some like trauma in their past mm. and don't really open to people.
Yeah, we had one guy, his name was Animal, and that's his name.
Animal?
I don't remember his actual name, but he calls himself Animal.
Uh-huh.
So when he first came to us, he had a big beard and a big long haircut, and he wouldn't really talk to us much, and he didn't want anything to do with our haircuts. And eventually he'd get a trim on his hair, and then he'd get a beard trim, and then now he's got a shaved head and no beard anymore. I think he's grown it out again, actually, but he's been someone who was very aggressive and very didn't want to talk to anyone, and then over the year and getting to know us is that
trust level
every
is
week.
Built up.
Yeah. Oh, that's really great. Yeah. So, do you remember the process? How it changed from a very
I think it was just seeing us every week and seeing that we do care and that we're coming back every week and that we're not doing this from any side of a selfish reason. We're just wanting to give back to a community that we've gotten something from. So he saw that we were coming back every week and saw that we could build a relationship over that. And I think that's what really brought him out of his shell.
Oh, that's really great. Do you now still keep in touch with that guy?
We see him every week. Yeah, we're down
oh,
there.
Oh, still
Sunday.
Now, every
yeah.
Sunday. Okay. Yeah, and so go to the very beginning of your your job. When and how you decide to give back to the community in the Downtown East Side? How is there any specific event or what happened at that time that make you decide to give back to the community?
To be honest, I think I've always wanted to do something like that because of where I came from in my past, but I just didn't know a vehicle to do that. And we're not reinventing the wheel. There's lots of people online nowadays that are going into their communities and doing haircuts and like Beauty Night for abused women, which my wife does now. There's so many things available, so I think we got our ideas off people like that and started doing it ourselves and realized the magic in it, and we just love it. So.
Oh yeah.
Found an avenue that we can give back as well. Something that we can do without political influence or any big money that we could throw at another service. We found something that we can do in our own time, give back.
We were doing it really. We were just doing it because it felt good and it felt right.
Yeah. I want to know that when did you start doing the haircut or the doing the free haircut, learn how to do the hair cutting thing.
I've been cutting hair for about 6 years, and
I'm on my 17th year.
Yep.
So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then Ross is over 10, so we've got quite a few years experience between us.
Yeah, I went to school. Cam learned, he did his first haircut in prison,
and then apprenticed
under different salons and that.
Did you have that thought to help people, volunteering things at the very beginning of your...
The careers?
Yeah.
Not at all. No, it was something I wanted to give people the feeling of looking good and feeling good walking out of the salon, but that was never, I never thought about doing it for homeless people at all.
So when is the time point of the change?
It was within a week we were talking about. Within a week we came up with the idea and we were on the streets that Sunday doing it.
We should go do it, and then we just picked a day and went and did it.
Yeah, it was literally within 5 days or something. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So yeah, even in the last year and a half, there hasn't been one Sunday that all three of us have missed. If we have to, have Josh not show up because he's sick or his parents are in town, then we'll have other volunteers come out from all over the city, which is great.
Yes, you work from Monday to Friday, and you still have to volunteer in the Downtown East Side.
Josh and I work 6 days a week here
seven.
In the salon.
Oh.
Seven, actually. We work Monday through Saturday here in the salon. Sunday morning, we go to the East Side and cut, and then by 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon, we're back in the salon.
Seems like you never have off.
We have to book it ahead, and we have to make sure with our other two guys that they're going to be able to cover that Sunday if I go away with my wife, or Josh's parents come, or he goes to Calgary or Edmonton.
So, I'm really curious, how to balance your time between the family time and other your leisure time, because it seems that you really do not have leisure time.
But that is my leisure time. That's what people I think don't get is we. If we have had a rough week or a busy week, that 3 hours on Sunday is what levels me out, calms me out more than a day off on the couch. Yeah.
It doesn't feel like work at all. It feels like you're going to hang out with the people that you need to catch up with. You haven't seen them all week and you want to know what's going on.
Yeah, because they really are our friends and family now.
So can I say that it's quite... different from what you've been doing on from Monday?
I wouldn't say so. Then that's the thing we said. We didn't want to just go and shave heads. We wanted to give these people what a person paying $50 in our chair would get through the week. So we give them exactly what they would ask for and want in a $50 haircut in the salon. So yeah, we don't try and rush it or do any different work. So it really is. It's just like working with a different type of clientele on Sundays in a more open setting.
Mm-hmm. So,
and outside.
Yeah, they don't tip as well, but
no.
Oh. they don't pay for you, they don't tip you as well, and is there any...
kidding about that.
Yeah, I know. Is there any, like, something you get from them? Oh, I mean, there's spiritual,
not
the material?
Yeah, everyone has their different things. Sorry to interrupt you, like, whether it's sharing conversation. Josh has an Asian client that he doesn't have anything to give, but he really appreciates Josh's cut and the time with him, so when Josh is done, he'll come up and give him a little juice box that he's saved, and he says, you know, here, and take this, and he has a woman that made him cookies last week. So a lot of people try and just give what, and of course we feel guilty taking anything, but they're very adamant to take the odd juice box or treat or something.
Oh, that's all made by themselves.
All made by themselves,
that's cool. I heard from that you are start an outreach project with the organization called Directions Youth Center. How's that project going so far?
We don't really have, we've tried to get different funding for different projects and to get tools and that kind of thing, and so we're still working on getting a lot of that tools and setting that up with them. And we've had a lot of trouble getting interest in the program from Direction, so we're working on that still, but we don't really have any updates on it yet.
Okay, do you have any like plan of your bigger picture or your future?
Right now we're taking it as it comes. We have a few different ideas, but we've tried to let the whole thing happen organically from the start, and that's the beauty of it, is we haven't pushed any certain direction. But we have people sending their resumes from all over BC to start up a Street Thug Barber chapter in their community, which I really like the sound of the whole movement growing, because like I say, people are doing this all over the world, so mm-hmm. it just creates even more awareness for the homeless problem and the people in need.
The Street Thug Barbers haven't missed any Sunday in the whole 20 months, donating time and talents to the community. They three make me truly believe in the goodness of mankind. What they have been doing is a lot more than free hairdressing. They love Vancouver and the community in the downtown east side.
Yeah, I was born here and I was raised on the island. Uh-huh. So on the island it was a bit different 30, 40 years ago, but because it was mainly white people. And then you come over here and even doing hair was very different, because all of a sudden you're doing Asian and Filipino and all these different types of hair. So
yeah,
it was really neat.
So many minority groups here in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm, yeah. There is, yeah. My best friend's from Iran. He came here 18 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he loves it here.
You seem to have a really great respect for people living in downtown Eastside. I'm wondering, what is your motivation of, like, all of you guys doing that?
I think mine is just, it feels natural. It feels what I should be doing. Yeah. You know? What I would want, and what I did want when I was on those streets. Mm. You know, I just remember feeling lonely and beaten and, you know, all those things when you didn't have anybody around me. So when I have the ability to give support like that, I know the feeling of needing it.
You know the feeling?
I've been there, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you mind if me asking?
Yeah.
Like, is there any, like, memories of your own?
Of me being on the streets? Well, there was, it's a silly memory, but one of the ones that always stands out is I had stayed in a shelter one night called Street Link in Victoria, and I was sitting on, you had to leave the shelter by 7 in the morning, even if you had nowhere to go. So we were sitting on the steps and nowhere to go, no my hand, and I noticed people walking to work, a $5 Starbucks in their hand, and I just wanted to be at a place in my life where I could afford that coffee every morning again, that simple $5 coffee. But that's what it meant to me at that time. I had lost everything in my life, so it just has really created over my lifetime an awareness that the little things matter in life, like giving to your neighbors and helping out, and yeah.
Cameron said the greatest part of the city is the diversity here. And he loves talking to people from different groups just as talking to anybody else.
It's a melting pot. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's like a mini New York. I think it's great.
Yeah.
We always say we have no filter when we talk, and we don't really watch what we say.
So what did you usually talk to those people living in downtown Eastside? Because I know that some of them are drug addicts.
Yeah, a lot of them.
And is there any other way that, apart from hair cutting, that you can affect them?
to approach people.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing is just to people, just like you talk to anybody else, or anybody else. They just are down on their luck. And one thing I've come to know as a reality in my own life is most of us that I know are only a couple checks away from being in a really tight spot. You know, some of us don't have family and stuff like that that can help out.
Yeah, I really appreciate the conversation.
No
Thank you
problem.
So much.
Thank you. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For doing this.
Thank you, Yusheng. Finally, we will be closing with CJSW Standing Rock Part 1, a segment featuring interviews carried out by reporters from CJSW 90.9 FM in Calgary with protesters at Standing Rock. This is the first segment from their four-part series. We will be playing this piece after we close the news broadcast for today.
And that's our program for December 9th. Today's newscast was brought to you by talented volunteer efforts. If you would like to share your comments, get involved, or give us an important news tip, contact us through our Facebook, Twitter, or email us at news@citr.ca.
You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/radio/news/101. You can also find more great content on our SoundCloud and Mixcloud pages. For more independent news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Andrew Seal.
And I'm Louis Xu. Today's broadcast was produced by Sahir Asif from the entire news team at CITR. Thank you for listening.
After this next segment, stay tuned for Sean Harbottle's Hippity Hoppity Brigade at 6 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM.
There's an old Lakota prophecy of a black snake, a creature that would rise from the deep, bringing with it great sorrow and great destruction. For many years, the Lakota peoples have wondered what the prophecy meant and when it would come to pass. This is Standing Rock. Broadcasting from Treaty 7 land, my name is Mike Todd. Welcome to the first part of a six-part series.
So we're here to make a stand. It's not just our issue as people who are here as defenders of the sacred, as defenders of the water, as protectors of the water. We are not protesters. We are defenders of the sacredness of Mother Earth.
The Dakota Access Pipeline, or DAPL, is a $3.8 billion underground oil pipeline project being executed by the Texas Corporation Energy Transfer Partners with support from Calgary-based company Enbridge and financial support from Toronto-based bank TD, among many others. The Black Snake has crossed sacred lands and burial sites and is trying to travel directly north of the reservation under the Missouri River, or the Inyan Wakangapi Wakpa River that makes the sacred stones. The river provides drinking water to over 18 million people. The indigenous peoples make clear they call themselves water protectors, not protesters.
We don't call them protesters, we call them protectors.
When we traveled to Standing Rock, the camps were on the cusp of winter. Nonviolence was mandatory, and no drugs, guns, or alcohol were present. We saw hundreds of flags flying and over 1,000 folks singing, talking, and praying. Here are some of their stories.
My name is Ivan Looking Horse from the, I'll say, the Ocheti Shakowi of the Sioux Nation. I am here as a person that is in the center of all the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota nations, and they range in a five-state region and two Canadian provinces in our territorial rights of our ancestors. For myself, I'm here because of the need for our people to become aware of what is going on in the world, and I've been here from the beginning, and I've also participated in a lot of spiritual rides and spiritual run across our nations to bring awareness of the need for prayer and a need for awareness of our contaminating our lands and our waters, and our struggle for our sacred sites, our ceremonial grounds, and And so it's in my blood to always fight for the future generations. My job is to keep everybody in prayer and peaceful and make sure that everybody's aware that we don't want to have no alcohol, no drugs, no weapons in this camp, and make sure everything is peaceful, and make sure all the protecting of our, we don't call them protesters, we call them protectors. So there's a difference there, and that they stay in prayer. And there is a lot of indigenous people that are up in Canada that are from this Ocheti Shakoni also. And in our ancestors' time, we called Canada Onchi Maka Tamakoche. That is grandmother's land, and this is where we used to pick and get a lot of our medicines that sustain our longevity of life, and also our healing of our people. I'd say pay attention to your indigenous peoples, the native tribes up there, because they have the same teachings that we have, and contamination of our waters is something that we all need to fight for, to stop the contamination of and poisoning of our land base and our waters. And we today are faced with a new president of the United States, and he is a corporate leader. And so we have a struggle to fight for our water, to keep our water safe. And with this corporate leader, I know our struggle is going to be a lot harder. And hopefully he opens his eyes to the future of our generations to come, to have clean, safe water, and also good relations with all the indigenous people. And I feel that to have a future for our generations, for our children, we have to do this here, fight for our water, that all mothers, grandmothers that know about, that to sustain their children, they need to do this struggle to end the contamination of our grandmother Earth, not only from pipelines, but from uranium, from any type of mining that contaminates our waters and our lands. We are a ceremonial people. We know that we can get messages from the spiritual world and the animals. And we are also the voices for the animals that don't have no voice, like the eagles, the bear, the buffalo, the deer, the caribou, and all these things that we want to bring awareness to the common man, so that they can understand that for them to survive also, and their children to survive also, they have to become aware of what is happening around them. I dream of seeing our nations come together, our indigenous nations. Today there's more than 500 flags that have come, more than 500 nations that have come here and vowed solidarity for mankind.
Yeah.
Nunania Ahoba Shinami Na Agaitika. My name is Myron Dewey. I'm the owner of Digital Smoke Signals. And I'm Paiute Shoshone from Nevada. And on my mom's side, I'm a Bishop Paiute tribe. And I'm here as a drone pilot and an educator